weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Joseph Trujillo Falcon, assistant professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences. The FIFA World Cup is considered the ultimate competition in international soccer, with billions of fans tuning in to watch their favorite teams representing their countries. But there are many weather concerns ahead of the FIFA World Cup. Extreme heat, storms, and even hurricanes might put stadiums and players at risk. The National Weather Service is working with local emergency management agencies to monitor extreme weather during the FIFA World Cup. Joining us to talk about how the agency is supporting this international sporting event is Stephanie Saprell. Stephanie is the World Cup planning lead at the National Weather Service. From being a meteorologist to an emergency response specialist, Stephanie has been working for the agency for over 17 years. Thank you for joining us, Stephanie.
Great, thank you, and thanks for having me.
As always, a pleasure. Let's start off from square one here, because so much comes into play when we're considering the World Cup. What role does the National Weather Service play in major events like the FIFA World Cup?
Oh, great question. So the National Weather Service provides official weather forecast warnings and even decision support services to help our core partners make informed safety and operational decisions. So for this particular time frame of the World Cup, we have several offices who will be providing on-site support at the request of our core partners, as well as congressionally mandated, to ensure that they have the forecast as well as keep an eye on the radar or any sort of lightning, or provide information for heat, for example, ahead of, during, and even after the event.
And I know you really started to highlight some of these hazards. You know, you brought up lightning, you brought up heat. But as we approach the World Cup, what do you think are some of the biggest weather hazards the agency is preparing for ahead of the tournament?
Yeah, it's summer, so you can have everything from heat, lightning, severe thunderstorms, flash flooding. We're also in tropical season. Fire weather concerns, especially out west, is also a concern. So we are kind of looking at the gamut of any sort of weather that may occur during the World Cup timeframe. So that's why we want to be a part of that planning process with our core partners to ensure they have the tools, to ensure they have plans in place if any of these sort of hazards occur. For example, even just a couple of days ago, Kansas City ended up issuing a tornado warning for downtown Kansas City.
Radar projection at 9:05 showing an impressive severe cell that is blowing up near Emporia off to the south and west of the city. You zoom into KC, storms have tried to get going, but it really hasn't materialized, just some weak showers in the city.
We really want to make sure that the core partners, if that scenario occurred during the World Cup timeframe, that they know what actions to do, they have the communications in place to inform the public. And we want to make sure that they are getting the information from us at a timely manner to help make those decisions. Even today, I was watching, the weather down in Houston. There was lightning all over the city. So again, lightning and convective is definitely probably one of the biggest concerns. And again, we really want to ensure that our core partners who are making those decisions have the information not only from us to make those accurate announcements or communication platforms that's needed.
Now, thanks so much for sharing that. And I also heard about this Kansas City. You know, Lionel Messi and Argentina were welcome to the United States here with some good old-fashioned severe weather around the area. So that's just, you know, that's how it can really be in these sort of sporting events. But I really admire you going through every single one of these hazards. It's things that we often don't think about. And I'd love to take some time to break down each one of these hazards in particular. So let's start off with heat here, because recent research published in Scientific Reports show that 10 out of the 16 sites of the 2026 FIFA World Cup are at a very high risk of experiencing extreme heat stress conditions.
Climate change has increased the intensity of extreme heat events at host venues, while also raising the Earth's average surface temperature. It's a dangerous combination.
and 7 of these sites are located here in the United States. Which host cities concern you the most when it comes to heat risk, and why?
For heat in general, you know, I think all of them are a concern. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, in LA or if it's in Miami or even in Kansas City. I think if people are not taking heat seriously, it could definitely be a cause of concern. You know, not only at the any if you were attending those matches, not only for that, but it's the fan fest or the fan zones where people are going to be outdoors, you know, walking around, waiting in lines. You know, those kind of scenarios kind of make me slightly concerned, especially if you're not acclimated to the heat. There's not going to be locations for a lot of shade. So we really want people to actually take heat very seriously. We want to ensure that people are wearing loose fitted clothing, reflective white, not black, making sure that they drink plenty of water and take breaks if needed. If they are starting to feel any sort of heat exhaustion or start feeling flushed, that they take it seriously and to notify medical correspondents to make sure they take care of themselves.
And all that is very important to consider. You know, something else that you highlighted here was the decision support services that the National Weather Service brings. And I always find it so fascinating because, you know, again, it's not something that we always think about. But one of the kind of services that you provide to are to core partners, including medical staff. Can you describe how that process looks like for heat risk in this collaborative environment?
Yeah. So again, it all begins at being a part of that planning process, making those connections with the medical community, with public health, with the local emergency managers, even the state emergency operations centers. Just having that kind of collaboration with each other and that planning process really goes a long way. So when we do start issuing any sort of heat risk products or even, heat headlines, that the medical staff understands what that means and they can begin to make any sort of mitigation efforts as detailed in the plans that have been in place. So it's just beginning at that early conversations and then watching it unfold during large scale events such as World Cup or even at a local football game or a sporting event really can go a long way to ensure people have that protection and those mitigation efforts to make sure that they're safe during heat.
Thanks so much for sharing that. And, you know, just even beyond heat, more threats come in when you consider the summertime, as you were eloquently mentioning, including severe weather, thunderstorms, hail, strong winds, and even flash flooding. How does the National Weather Service prepare for all of these multiple weather hazards happening in various cities all at once? It really sounds like a daunting task.
It does sound daunting, but that's what we do. That's why we are here. You know, we are the official. We issue the 7-day forecast, whether it is, fire concerns or severe concerns or even just a blue sky day. We put together a 7-day forecast for across the country, as well as several territories. We issue those watches, warnings, and advisories for any sort of hazardous weather that may unfold. And we also provide that on-site IDSS. That's why we have 122 weather forecast offices across the country to be able to handle this large task of forecasting, from coast to coast and border to border. Having these relationships and those offices understanding the microclimate really goes a long way to ensure we have the most accurate forecast as possible, whether it's at one of the 11 match sites or whether it's in your hometown that you're listening to right now. We want to make sure that the forecast is accurate as possible. And with the research that we've done, with the collaboration across the country from our national centers to our local offices, that's how we complete this daunting task to ensure that everyone's prepared and everyone has the information that they need.
And you know what? We thank you and the entire agency for this very important work. As the World Cup continues and starts to bring all of these events, you know, we're also going to be considering leveraging emerging technologies, you know, with so much conversations about artificial intelligence, even new ways to provide outlooks on weather. Are there any emerging technologies that the agency is using to provide more accurate forecasts for these hazards?
Yeah, so we have been working on a couple of different things in the background. So the National Severe Storms Laboratory did create a application called Warn On Forecast. This is something that the Weather Service has incorporated within its operational model. This worn on forecast application really helps us in the between that watch to warning timeframe on any sort of convective hazard. So it really begins to highlight where the potential for a tornado touchdown could be, where a large hail could occur, where wind shifts, which or even stronger winds could be pose a hazard, heavy rain as well, really kind of honing in on the potential for flash flooding or even urban flooding. So this is one of the newer technologies we've been utilizing internally to help increase our messaging to make sure our core partners have the latest information and they know where we're kind of honing in on the potential for some hazardous weather, more at the county level rather than a larger area. Another thing we've been working on with the NOAA's Office of Atmospheric Research is looking at different plume modeling. So there's the potential always for events, large events, or even small events of some sort of hazmat concern. So we've been working with them to ensure we have various applications and timeframes for plume modeling to show if some sort of a chemical release occurred, where would it go into the atmosphere? So that has been a great partnership with another NOAA line office and utilizing this technology. And that's not to say we're the only ones to do it. We also are doing this in the bounds in coordination with our colleagues at the EPA, at FEMA, at Department of Homeland Security. So this is a larger effort than just a NOAA thing as well. And last but not least, we've been trying to increase our capability to view high-res lightning information. So we've been coordinating a lot with one of our vendors, Vaisala, to have high-res lightning data, not only cloud-to-cloud, but cloud-to-ground, to be able to have a good picture of lightning concerns throughout not only the World Cup timeframe, but also for any kind of large event or small event that occurs across the United States.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Joseph Trujillo Falcon, assistant professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences. Today, we're talking about how the National Weather Service is preparing for this year's FIFA World Cup with Stephanie Saprell, the National Weather Service World Cup Planning Lead. The World Cup happens to also coincide with the Atlantic hurricane season, potentially affecting stadiums here in the United States like Houston and Miami.
Hundreds of thousands of visitors from around the world are expected to make their way to the region for matches at Hard Rock Stadium, now dubbed Miami Stadium, for the World Cup. And while hurricane preparedness is nothing new for Florida residents, many visitors have likely never experienced a hurricane or tropical storm, nor have they seen the massive amounts of rain and flooding that could follow a Miami afternoon downpour. I mean, just take a look at some of the effects felt here in Miami during Hurricane Irma back in 2017.
Stephanie, could you please describe the planning process behind these kinds of hazards?
Yeah, so, of course, June 1st, tropical season has officially begun, and we're definitely keeping an eye on the basins. Not so much for our planning process, but overall kind of keeping an eye on what could occur. So we work closely with our colleagues at the Climate Prediction Center. They do put out a 2 to 3 week kind of global scale look to see where tropical development could potentially occur. So that's one of the things that we're really keeping a close eye on as the World Cup tournament does kind of coincide with that time frame. So that's one application that we utilize. We also keep close tabs or conversations with the National Hurricane Center. If they start seeing any sort of concern or invest, they'll begin to highlight that. And so we'll definitely use that within our planning processes to ensure that our core partners have that information and that we continue to keep that conversation going, especially if it develops into any sort of hurricane or tropical storm. We're really keeping a close eye on it, but we recognize that it's just not the storms that it's going to cause the biggest risk. It's going to be any sort of moisture push or that could trigger some sort of tropical convection, heavy rain, and then lightning threat as well.
Speaking of lightning, It has a history of delaying sporting events in the past and can present serious risks to tourists and avid sports fans, especially in an outdoor setting. For our listeners who may be attending these games, what are the safety protocols you recommend if thunderstorms approach a stadium?
Yeah, so definitely. Lightning is one of those hazards that can really escalate quickly at any sort of outdoor event. So we really, we have a saying at the Weather Service, when thunder roars, go indoors. So basically, if you hear thunder and you're really close enough to be struck by lightning, we also do encourage you to listen to, public safety announcements or the communication that's coming from any kind of event that you are at. They are going to provide the best information to ensure that they keep you safe as well. But I always recommend to have multiple ways to get weather information, different ways to get, the watches or different ways to get the warnings. That way you can make yourself prepared as well. And then lastly, we do encourage if you don't feel comfortable, if the sky is starting to turn dark, feel free to just get up and go into shelter just to make sure that you're prepared as an individual or your family is prepared as well. Really the best safety actions for these type of events is to make sure you're planned ahead of time, know where to go, and just, again, listen to instructions from public safety officials.
You know, Stephanie, as you start to heed this very fantastic advice, I'm very curious to learn how much notice do meteorologists typically give before lightning becomes a threat to an outdoor event like this?
Yeah, and honestly, it really is dependent on that meteorological setup. Sometimes, forecasters can see the potential for thunderstorms hours in advance, especially if it's a line of storms coming their way. But sometimes we can get those storms that just kind of pop up out of nowhere that could pose a lightning risk as well. So on days of the events or, all the time, the National Weather Service really monitors radar, satellite, keeping an eye on that lightning concern, detection data that we get from our satellites and from other guidance to really kind of help hone in on timing and concerns. For these outdoor events, we really provide our core partners with the largest lead time as possible. We want to make sure that they have that informed decision so that they can tell you as the public of what time that could occur to ensure that you get into safety ahead of time. But again, it goes back to that planning. We want to make sure that, when we talk about lightning, that it's in the plan. So when a lightning does pop up, or if we see that lightning coming or approaching your event, they already have the procedures in place to assure that you get to safety first.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. When thunder roars, go indoors. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about weather and climate. Today, we are talking with Stephanie Saprell, the National Weather Service World Cup Planning Lead. You know, beyond the hazards themselves, I assume there's just so much going on all at once. And we briefly were talking about it earlier in this interview, but I really want to dig into it a little bit more, Stephanie. How does the National Weather Service coordinate with forecast offices in each city to ensure they have dedicated meteorologists for every single event?
Yeah, great question. There's definitely a lot of coordination and collaboration going on. But again, we're not only focused on those 11 cities. It's really a coordination across the entire agency as well to make sure that we are collaborating, that we all have a seamless weather picture across the country. For each match site that has been asked by the National Weather Service to provide support, those offices really have that understanding of not only the local weather, but the local partners and the micro vulnerabilities of those locations. So we really rely on those sites. But in terms of overall communication, it's something that we always do. We do it with our 122 forecast offices already to ensure that there's a seamless picture and that we are forecasting together as an agency.
And another angle that we really have to consider are just the tourists themselves coming from all over the world, traveling to the United States to see their favorite teams. A lot of these areas, they may not be able to speak English. Could you explain a little bit about how the National Weather Service plans on communicating weather conditions and emergencies to these groups?
Great question. You know, the World Cup definitely brings that unique communication challenges because of the increased number of international visitors. While we focus on our core partners, which are very English speaking, we do have several different avenues to help with the communication barrier. So we do have a lot of our forecast information already in Spanish and in French. And if you go to weather.gov/translate, you can see a host of other different languages that are provided in for our forecast. So that website will show you the watches, warnings, and advisories. And I think we're up to 10 or 12 different languages. Also, several different of our products are also in those different languages. So I recommend people to take a look at that website, utilize that feature to learn more and to see the different languages and ways to get the weather information as needed.
And just to contextualize it for our listening audience here, FIFA now holds several official languages, including English, French, German, Spanish, Arabic, Portuguese, and even Slavic languages. So there's just so much to consider. And it looks like the National Weather Service is at the forefront of these efforts. So we thank you all for that. Let's move on a little bit to talk about your career in general, just because this is such a unique and honestly super cool position. Could you tell me about a day in the life of a National Weather Service World Cup planning lead? And how did you even end up in this role?
Yeah, you know, I asked myself that same question. No, but seriously, every day looks a little bit different. And I think that's what makes this job so interesting. The idea of being able to communicate across the entire country, not only with our weather forecast offices, but with the national centers and our headquarters, is really self-fulfilling to learn all the different aspects of the agency and to bring everyone together to support our core partners during this event. We talked about tools and technology to be able to reach out across the agency lines to work with the Office of Atmospheric Research was definitely one of the benefits to be able to provide this tool for our forecast offices to have that scenario building just in case something occurs, I think is definitely great. We really focus on building a lot of plans to make sure not only our core partners are prepared, but we're prepared as well, especially if a certain event occurs. We definitely improve on our communication. We exercise our plans and procedures to make sure that we're ready. And we continue to have a lot of decision point discussion and contingency plans. You know, this role, again, it's the connecting people together. If there is a need, I know who to go to fix that or to fulfill that need. So I think that's probably my favorite part of the job is trying to be a fixer in a way to make sure that people have what they need. It's definitely a very cool job, but it's a lot of spreadsheets and meetings and plannings and a lot of email as well. How I got into it was I had been planning large scale events in the past, a couple of other large events. And so when the opportunity arose, I couldn't say no. And it's definitely been a joy to do it.
No, that's amazing. And I can't imagine how much planning this took. A lot of people often think that, the agency is like the National Weather Service, plan maybe a couple of months before, but I know this has been a multi-year effort. So we thank you so much to you and your entire team for advancing public safety, as that's really core of the mission of the National Weather Service here. So, Stephanie, looking on into the future, I don't know if we want to talk about that, but, as we start to plan the 2026 World Cup, there are also more future international sporting events to look forward to, like the 2028 Olympics. Do we expect the National Weather Service to provide services for these kinds of events in the future?
Yeah, so we are in early planning stages for 2028. We are going to look at this time frame of the World Cup and the amount of support for our core partners during this. We're hoping to take a lot of the lessons learned, not only in the planning process for what I've been doing, but also what our offices have been doing. And we hope to learn from that and to build upon it. So for 2028, like I said, we're starting that early planning process, but hopefully what the lessons we learned over the next couple of months we'll be able to put into that as we move forward to any other large events or even small event that's asked of us in the future.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. And I want to wrap up this podcast with one very personal but very important question. Which team are you rooting for here at the World Cup this upcoming summer?
That's a great question. I haven't had time to do my research on any of the teams. So I'm actually based in Kansas City, so I might be rooting for one of the base camp teams, so Argentina or Netherlands or even England. So kind of picking all the heavy hitters.
No, you can never go wrong with any of those teams. And, you know, it's such an exciting event to come here. Personally, you know, I was born in Peru, so I would root for Peru. But the last time they qualified was in 2018. The country shut down for a couple of days when that happened. We haven't qualified ever since. But you know what? Team USA, all in all, in heart. And whatever team it is, just know that the National Weather Service is here to provide decision support services to the American public and beyond, too. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, Stephanie. We really admire all of the efforts and insights you have into this program, and we look forward to a very fantastic World Cup.
Great. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Stephanie Saprell, the National Weather Service World Cup Planning Lead. I'm Joseph Trujillo Falcon, Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences. Thanks for joining us on Weather Realness. Coming up next, we'll be reviewing war movie Pressure and breaking down the weather science behind the film. Do you have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.